from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We need to have common sense, bipartisan reform. We need to have a good conversation about how do we keep our citizens safer, how do we protect our students, our children, our families. And this should be done on a bipartisan basis. We shouldn't just go for headlines. We should go for things that will actually make a difference.
The speaker has had the letter for 3 months. It would take all of 20 minutes to know that that was sexual harassment.
There seems to be considerable pressure arising to have him replaced as head of the party in Illinois, but not before the March 20th primary.
I'm not resigning. I'm moving forward. I'm working with this particular issue, and we're going to work our way through it.
That's the House Speaker, Michael Madigan. He's also the Democratic Party chairman in Illinois. He's been facing continued pressure over how he's dealt with harassment claims on his watch, and he had a warning for lawmakers this week. Also, Governor Rauner feeling some pressure when it comes to gun legislation on his desk. What will he do with it? He has yet to tip his hand on that one. We'll talk about that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. I'm joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, Maureen McKinney, reporter for NPR Illinois, and Bernie Schoenberg, our guest this week, political writer and columnist with the State Journal Register here in Springfield. Bernie, good to see you once again.
Good to be back.
Now, Maureen, I know you can only stay with us a few minutes, but you wrote about the speaker and party chairman, Michael Madigan, this week, and what was termed his Me Too problem. He's been under scrutiny since a former campaign staff worker claimed that she was harassed. The speaker knew about it and basically dragged his feet on taking action. And that person's name, Elena Hampton, she came forward. And then you wrote this piece this week, again, on that Me Too problem. What is Mike Madigan's problem?
He's not responded quickly enough to concerns of people like Elena Hampton. That hasn't gone over well. He's been in the trouble in the past with conflict of interest with his law firm covering board review tax appeals and how his firm has gotten lots of money out of doing that.
You know, what's interesting to me is that issue right there. The speaker, Madigan, has been hit on quite a bit by Governor Rauner. This whole issue, as this has played out here, we've not heard anything from the governor, and maybe the governor's just letting this take its course, but it's been the Democrats I've heard more from. I've heard more, especially women, saying that maybe it's time for him to go, but there's also been some men thrown in there as well. Charlie, this seems to be sticking to him. We heard at the start of this show how Dick Simpson, a political scientist, he was the one saying that there is this considerable pressure building up to replace him, at least as the party chairman, maybe after the primary is over with. Could you see that happening here?
I suppose it's possible. I mean, anything is possible. I would not be willing to bet money on it, however, because as Maureen said, there's been other issues that have dogged Madigan in the past. He's always emerged relatively unscathed. And it occurs to me, you look at the litany of people that Patrick Fitzgerald, the former U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Illinois, managed to bring to trial on charges of corruption. You look at some of the other people who've been prosecuted. You have to imagine that any U.S. attorney would have taken aim at Michael Madigan over the last 30-some years, 40-some years, because if you could bring him down, that would be a real feather in your cap. And the fact that he's gotten scrutinized by the prosecution, by the media, and there's never been anything of which he's been found guilty. Now, the difference with this situation is that the environment has certainly changed. The Me Too movement has heightened people's awareness of improper conduct. And looking back, well, how did the people who were in a position to do something about it, how did they respond to these instances of terrible behavior? And maybe 20 years ago, it would not have been such a big deal. But now it's a different environment. And so I think that's at work. The key will be who gets elected to be the state central committeeman out of the different congressional districts for the Democratic Party. They're the ones who vote for the party chair.
Something that some of the people I talked to said, or Rick Pearson actually said, was there may be some desire among Democrats to humble Madigan a little bit, and this is a chance that they've not had before.
And what's interesting, if you change leader of the party, even after the primary, you're looking at November, perhaps with new party leadership. Clearly, Madigan is fighting this. Senator Dick Durbin is among those doing robocalls to try to, as Charlie said, elect people to the State Central Committee who would continue working with Madigan. If he were to leave that chairmanship, it's kind of an interesting party structure right now because it's mostly Madigan and his committees. You know, if you look at their website in recent years, they're not state-of-the-art, up-to-the-minute. You know, they just kind of list who their candidates are and who's maybe and at least who's on the committee. And a lot of it is internal stuff. So, you know, to take over a party structure and build it with a new name out front might be a difficult thing. On the other hand, because of the millions of dollars that Governor Rauner has spent demonizing Mike Madigan over the last few years in advertisements, in addition to the public comments he makes, Madigan is unpopular. He doesn't get elected statewide. I know Charlie says this a lot. He only gets elected from his own district. But he is the face that the Republicans attach to every other Democrat that they're trying to beat. So it will be interesting. The other thing to watch is who wins the Democratic primary. I think, you know, J.B. Pritzker has not been highly critical of Madigan, also has – but he has, is the one actually would be best in place to help somebody else or help himself take over the party because he's got 15 or so offices across the state just for his campaign, which is more than the presence of the Democratic Party right now. If a Daniel Biss or a Chris Kennedy wins, they have each asked for Speaker Madigan to step down as chairman of the party. So it would be very awkward for they, as nominees of the party, to be running alongside the chairman of the party, Mike Madigan.
Well, you mentioned the robocalls that are going on mm-hmm. State Central Committee. That seems to me to tell me that there's nervousness there among Madigan.
As Maureen was talking about in her story, has said the pressure on Mike Madigan, and as Charlie said, the landscape has changed because of the Me Too movement. And so Madigan has made a couple of public statements, has appeared with his lawyer in public a couple times to discuss this, to not only say he is, you know, staying around and looking forward, but also to say he's making change, warning his members don't have any kind of inappropriate relationships with staff. They look at you as the boss, and bosses aren't supposed to have those kinds of relationships with employees. Be careful or I'll get involved myself. So he's trying to assert himself, but it is very different ground than, well, I have a firewall between my tax practice in my law firm and any legislation, because this is such an emotional issue.
And Bernie mentioned that memo. And Maureen, what was he hoping to accomplish with that memo that was sent out this week?
I think he's trying really hard. I think you notice that he's been more vocal in the press than he has been in the past. And I think that he's doing everything he can to get out in front.
He's playing defense, I guess you would say, maybe if you use the sports metaphor. Charlie, I want to go back to the party itself. I can remember, certainly I know all of us here can remember what the party, Democratic Party, the shape it was sort of in when Mike Madigan took over as chairman. It's hard for those people who maybe are not happy with him to not say that the party's in a better position than it was 20-some-odd years ago when he took over. It seems to me they fundraise better. It seems like there's been more stability at the top. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the factors that helped make Illinois what the national pundits refer to as a blue state. Now, part of it is demographics, the growth of our Hispanic population, and the ability of the Republican Party to turn off Latino voters with their anti-immigration rhetoric. Not all the Republican Party, certainly not Republicans in Illinois like Governor Rauner, but nationally, that's a real millstone around the neck of Republicans. So the demographics have changed. But I can recall one of the impetuses, if you will, for Madigan to become involved as party leader. One time he really didn't want to get involved with that. His concern was electing Democrats to the House, and he was criticized for that. Well, you know, you have no policy agenda. What are you for? And he was for whatever would help elect Democrats to the House. If it had to be a fiscal conservative, he was a fiscal conservative. If he needed to introduce legislation on mega hog farms, here's a guy from 63rd and Keeler talking about mega hog farms. But it was important in a House race. So I think what kind of led him to get involved more deeply with the party structure was the fiasco that happened in the 1986 primary when two LaRouche candidates got nominated for Lieutenant Governor and Secretary of State. And the reason they got nominated was because at the grassroots, the party operatives did a rotten job in a lot of the state in getting the message out. Now, in my particular precinct in Springfield, the slate, including Sangmeister for Lieutenant Governor, Buczynski for Secretary of State, ran within a point or two of Alan Dixon, the candidate for the U.S. Senate. But elsewhere, people looked at those names, Sangmeister, what kind of an American name is that? Buczynski? Heaven forbid. And they voted for Fairchild and Hart, nice, good, American-sounding names. And I think Madigan was really honked off about that. And there were a series of changes. Ultimately, I suspect he just said, if you're going to do a job well, you have to do it yourself if you want to get it done.
Maureen, we know you have to move on here in just a moment, but let me just have you sort of wrap this up by talking about you, in your story, you talked to Mark Brown of the Chicago Sun-Times. He was the one that said this could get a lot worse for Madigan if certain things happen. What were some of those things he was talking about?
Well, like we talked about, if either Biss or Kennedy end up being the governor nominee, he may have a problem. And also, if more women come forward, and also if he loses the chairmanship.
So he certainly, we will be watching this as we go forward, but certainly a big date coming up will be the primary, and we'll see what happens after that point. But Maureen, thanks for being with us today and sitting in for a little bit and talking about that story.
You're welcome.
Let's turn our attention now to another issue that's been getting some prominence, and that is Governor Bruce Rauner. He's being asked about every place he goes about gun legislation. This is a bill that has passed in the wake of the Parkland, Florida school shooting. The only bill so far to make it to his desk, while several have been debated, is one that would deal with the licensing of gun dealers in the state of Illinois. And Bernie, this is an issue, just like some of these others that have been, you know, very controversial for the governor. One that I don't know that he can come down either way that's going to satisfy a lot of people. So he's got a difficult decision to make. Is it likely he's going to wait till after the primary on this one?
I think that's very likely, just because if people think he might offend them with his decision or upset them, that's one thing. If he does, that's another. And the people he would upset if he were to sign this bill, which would add state regulation to the federal regulation that's already there of gun dealers, the right-leaning base in the Republican Party, many folks would not like it. And if he decides to veto it, then moderates who may be for him wouldn't like it. So very likely he's going to wait. He does say that he doesn't like bump stocks and they should be banned, the things that make a semi-automatic shoot like a machine gun. But he doesn't have legislation for that, and that's an easy one. Pretty much everybody wants that. He says schools should be safer, but he doesn't say why. And then he says, when reporters ask, I've been crystal clear on what I think, but the crystal clarity does not extend to what he's going to do with this bill, which is a pretty good bet he will not act on until after the primary because he has a 60-day window from the time it was passed.
And I'll go out on a limb and say after the primary, he will sign it.
And that will be interesting, and that would bring him more to the middle for the general election.
Right? And now he has to worry about Gene Ives on the right, and he's already offended those people with the two bills he signed over the summer, the one expanding public funding of abortion and the other, which Ives criticizes as making Illinois a sanctuary state, the Trust Act that in essence limits the ability of federal immigration authorities to speak to people who are being detained without a warrant.
Right.
Well, Charlie, we'll stay on the governor here because we'll talk more about the gun legislation in coming weeks when he makes up his mind what he's going to do with that. But Susana Mendoza, the state comptroller, she came out this week with something called Truth in Hiring, legislation she's supporting. This gets back to a term that was used, offshoring jobs from the governor's department. What are we talking about here and why is this a big deal?
Basically, there's been an ongoing practice in Illinois dating back at least 50 years, because that's sort of how long I've been watching this stuff, in which governor's offices of both parties routinely will try and pare down their what is reflected in the fiscal documents of the appropriation for their office and their staff. And they do that by having some of the people that report to them directly, some of the people who are, in essence, the governor's aides, being paid out of other people's payrolls. And as I say, it's gone on forever. I mean, years and years ago, Pat Quinn was a offshore employee. Back then, we called him ghost employees. He worked for Governor Dan Walker, and he was on some other agency's payroll. So it's not a new thing. And Mendoza's point is that, look, we want accurate fiscal information. And so if somebody's working for you, they should be on your payroll. And by her calculation, most of the people who work for the governor are being paid by someone else. She figured that there's 44 staffers that are on the books as working in the governor's office being paid about $4.5 million. But there's another 58 staffers being paid $5.5 million that are on other agency payrolls. The most notable example was his former education aide, Beth Purvis, who's getting paid something like $250,000 out of the Department of Human Services. Now, the governor's response is, well, everybody in state government works for me, and these things are kind of interchangeable. And I think Senator Menard, who's one of Andy Menard from Bunker Hill, a Democrat, is one of the sponsors of this legislation that Mendoza is pushing, makes a good point. If we don't have that kind of differentiation, then why should we pass any budgets for anybody? Just give the governor, you know, $36 billion and say, you spend it. And why this is important for nerds like myself is there's a degree of accountability here. You want to know exactly how your dollars are being spent. And by being able to disguise your full extent of your staff by putting them on other people's payrolls, it gives a distorted picture of what we're spending our money on and what the governor's expenses are.
So it's really, Bernie, just a shell game in some respects here with this money, because again, this is all taxpayer money, but it's another issue that comes out as far as we just don't have a clear picture.
Well, true, and the legislators who were there did make the point as well that we appropriate money for agencies like Human Services and like Department of Children and Family Services, and if somebody on the governor's staff is being paid from that budget, that means a caseworker or two or three may not be able to be hired. We're not providing as much service as we appropriated for. So as Charlie said, it's accountability, but it's also giving different agencies what they need to operate without the governor's office taking that away, while at the same time making it look like the governor is being oh so efficient by having a smaller budget than he actually has.
Well, another issue that popped up this week, and this goes back several years now, and this involves a candidate, the Republican, who is considered the front runner on the Republican side for the attorney general slot. That is Erica Harold. She's an attorney and actually a former Miss America. And apparently in one of the pageants that she was in, according to NBC Channel 5 out of Chicago, she was asked a question at one point. And according to what they have reported, that she was asked the question if she was responsible to place a child in foster care and had to choose between a loving gay couple or a heterosexual couple that were known child abusers, which would she choose? And according to the sources, all unidentified, told NBC5 that she chose the child abusers. That was her view of gay lifestyle at that point. Now, she has since put out press release saying that she doesn't remember this happening, this question, and doesn't remember that response, and that she does support same-sex adoption. But Bernie, this for a candidate running statewide, likely going to have some ramifications.
Well, it is, and we'll have to see where it goes and how much the public holds accountable someone for what they may have said that long ago. Marianne Ahern is the reporter who did the story, and just today as we tape this show, she has put out a page on Twitter of a book about pageants in Illinois and being Miss America, and it talks about this answer being given at that event, so that helps show that the sources that Channel 5 up there had were good. The initial statement from the Herald campaign was, voters should know that NBC Chicago has chosen to air an unverified story from anonymous sources 12 days before an election about an alleged event. And so obviously they're taking the political tack. Gary Grasso is a very conservative Republican who is running for attorney general in the primary against Erica Herold. He is clearly, you know, making hay out of this. And, you know, as a father to six children, I am sickened to the idea of placing any child in danger. So, yes, it will be an issue. Now, Erica Herold, of course, now says her view has changed. She would be open or agrees with the concept of gay couples adopting. So, again, she was apparently about 20 back then. She went on to be Miss America in a pageant in 2003. She's a Harvard Law grad, and she's backed by Governor Rauner, who recently gave her something over $300,000, I believe. Now, there is a question that Gary Grasso raises, and he's on the DuPage County Board and a former mayor of Burr Ridge. You know, will she be beholden to Governor Rauner? But a lot of people high in party structures pick their favorites. Governor Rauner picked Erica Herold, and, you know, she's gotten the newspaper endorsements that I've seen so far.
And Charlie, she was quite young back then, and I don't know the exact age, but like you said, maybe early 20s. And a lot of people have come around to a different thinking on this issue in that time frame. I mean, this issue has changed. A lot of people's minds have changed on it in you know, since the early 2000s or the late 90s. Is it fair to go back and you know, at least if she's come out now and says she favors this same-sex adoption, is that, you know, is it fair to keep harping on something she said back then?
I guess in this day and age, anything is fair. Kind of this, from my perspective, the standards of civility, the standards of decency in political campaigning have all gone out the window. And in a way, it's analogous to the Me Too movement. Back when Erica Herold was making those kinds of comments to a panel of Miss America judges, those ideas would not be found as offensive by as many people as they would be or are today. Similarly, the stuff that happened to women back then probably was not seen in such a bad light as it is today. So things change. And I always was of the opinion that people can change, they can reform, they can admit their past mistakes, and you should give them the benefit of the doubt.
And we had another issue this week with a state representative, some information coming out about abuse allegations against Bob Rita, a state representative who I think charges were brought apparently at one point, and he went to court over whether or not he had abused, was it his former girlfriend?
It was a girlfriend named Liz Hogan, and who thinks that the Me Too movement gives her more of an opportunity to get her story out. Now, there were charges brought at the time of apparently he went to her home and there was an angry interchange, and you know, the allegation was not pretty, and there was a charge brought, but Representative Rita was acquitted of that charge. Now, Liz Hogan is now backing a candidate who is running in the primary named Mary Carvelin against Representative Rita this year. And so they had a press conference. Liz Hogan, apparently the former girlfriend, her father was Andy McGann, a state representative who has since passed away. But the story was that Andy McGann, even though Bob Rita was acquitted of the charge at that time, which is his answer to this, you know, I was accused of something, I didn't do it or whatever, I was acquitted and moved on. But Andy McGann, the state rep, went to Speaker Madigan at the time and said, you should help with this. And Speaker Madigan apparently didn't want anything to do with it at the time. Speaker Madigan spokesman Steve Brown says he doesn't recall that conversation. So, again, we are talking about something that is a while ago. Involved the legal system. Representative Rita was acquitted by the legal system, but now with the new feeling toward what needs to be done in interpersonal relationships, it is creating heat on Speaker Madigan and has created two days in a row of stories in the Chicago papers, at least, including one that was all over the front page of the Tribune one day about the coming press conference, and then there was one about the press conference. So difficult you know, it's difficult and it's important, and the voters will decide.
Well, speaking of that, just a couple of minutes left here. And Bernie, while we have you on, I thought it'd be a good time to talk about a race that's getting a lot of attention and will get even more attention in the general election, the race for the 13th Congressional District. Republican Rodney Davis is the incumbent. This is a district that stretches across pretty much most of central Illinois. Right now we have Betsy Londrigan of Springfield, who'd been a fundraiser for Dick Durbin, Eric Jones from the Metro East. He'd worked in Lisa Madigan's office, David Gill, a doctor, John Ebel, a U of I professor, and Springfield activist Angel Sides. So give us kind of the, you know, as far as how the Democratic primary is shaping up there, give us kind of the quick overview of what you've seen in that race.
Well, David Gill, who's a physician from Bloomington, makes the point that he almost beat Rodney Davis in 2012 in Rodney's first run for this after Tim Johnson, former congressman, dropped out of the race and Rodney was appointed to the ballot. And David Gill, there was another candidate named John Hartman in southern Illinois who took 7% but was also on the liberal or progressive side of things. Gill says he would have won, so give me another chance. On the other hand, Gill has only raised a few thousand dollars here and there. He's known, but Betsy Londrigan Dirksen, who not only raised money for Senator Durbin but also for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Museum or the foundation for that. She's been kind of a professional fundraiser on contract to different folks and entities. She's very well-known name in Betsy Dirksen Londrigan, I mean, very well-known name in Springfield and has been working it hard. And she will let you know regularly that Senator Durbin and Jesse White are for her. But Eric Jones has worked on a couple of congressional committees in Washington, not well known, but getting well known, came back to Illinois after working on those congressional committees and for a law firm out in the D.C. area, but also worked for Lisa Madigan, who gave him a glowing endorsement for the work that he did on behalf of consumers in their office. So he's coming on. John Ebel is a religion professor at the University of Illinois in Champaign, first-time candidate, very passionate about this. He's also a veteran. In fact, part of his naval intelligence work was in Seoul, South Korea. So that's you know, fits into things these days. Angel Sides hasn't really raised any money. She entered the race late. She's from Springfield, and I think most people look at the other four candidates as the ones to watch. And we'll see, because Rodney Davis is very good on detail. You know, some people don't like that he doesn't have open public meetings with people because he says that would be not fruitful. He meets with constituents or groups one-on-one, but without allowing people to yell at him regularly. So we will see where that goes. But it's a good Democrat. It could be a very good Democratic year, and I'm sure the winner of that primary will hope to use that.
All right, and we'll likely see a lot of money spent in that race, especially going forward. Time now for notes from the field. Charlie?
Well, as I think everyone who's listening is aware, Illinois will officially become 200 years old as a state in December. And part of the promotion is a series of contests to determine the top, what would you say?
Top 10 lists of things.
Yeah, the top 10 lists of things that have happened. Well, the first one to come out was, what is the best movie ever made about Illinois? And the choice was, The Blues Brothers. And I have to say, I concur wholeheartedly. That's maybe one of the best movies, not just made in Illinois, but ever made anywhere.
That'll do it for this week's broadcast. Our members of our panel included Bernie Schoenberg, Charlie Wheeler, and Maureen McKinney. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.